This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here with Josh Rossi. Josh is a commercial and advertising photographer who works full-time doing what he loves. His client list includes Adobe, Glenn Beck, Advanced Photoshop Magazine, and John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire. And that's just a short list, by the way. He also runs his own photography podcast called Full Time Photographer. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And you know what's funny is that I remember seeing your work long before I knew who the heck you were. It was the fire portrait that you did for John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire. And I was like, man, that is cool. Who did that? And eventually I found out about you months and months later, subscribed to your podcast, and fast forward to today. And here we are.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You're killing it. And I'm really looking forward to our chat today.
Yeah. Thank you.
And you know, first of all, for the benefit of our listeners, especially those who may not know who you are, give us an overview of yourself, your background, and what you're doing today.
So my background is in art, I would say. I was born in Florence, Italy, and my dad's Italian, mom's American. And I always just grew up wanting to do art, and so I started like drawing portraits and just doing a bunch of different things, creative things. But my dad was sort of the classic pasta Italian chef, and he wanted me to take over his business. It's sort of like a classic story. It's hilarious. I need to see the movie, but you see me like the little kid saying, no, I'm never going to do that. You know, I'm never going to take over your business. I hate this. And so I really just wanted to go into the art side of things. And at some point I realized that I couldn't really make money doing portraits, or I didn't know how to do that as far as drawing portraits. So I just sort of got random jobs in restaurants, started taking his path. Then at some point I went to advertising school because I said, look, I'm done with this. I'm done with food. I'm done with, you know, all this stuff that I don't like doing. So maybe I'm going to go into advertising and like it there, because advertisers are super creative, you know, that whole thing. So I went to ad school and I actually started studying photography. Now, funny thing is they don't have a photography course that I was at. I was there at school and I got introduced to ad photography and commercial photography. And so I ended up not doing any homework and just sort of faded away and just left the school after 6 months to become a photographer. And yeah, since then it's just, I mean, I've had some rough patches and then some good patches. I had to figure out a lot of things. I mean, the story goes on and on from there, but yeah, that's basically where it started.
That's interesting. So I'm curious, do you speak Italian?
Yes, I do.
Fluently?
Yes.
Oh, no kidding. That's awesome. Very cool. So then, just so that we're crystal clear, what area of photography would you call your expertise?
So probably, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. Some people don't even call it photography.
What?
It's mainly, I mean, it's photography because that, like, I use photography with everything I do. That's the only thing I use. I don't do CG work or anything, but it's called more digital art. So I do, it's commercial and advertising photography / digital art. And I do a lot of compositing. So that's, I guess those are a bunch of random titles.
Yeah, and for those who have not seen Josh's work, I highly encourage you to head over to Josh Rossi, that's rossi.com, and we'll include it in the show notes to check out his style. I would say your style is, I think it's absolutely photography. Photography plus, because it has a very distinct style to it. I don't know. I think it's crazy that people would not think of your work as photography.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like the haters that I just get a lot of haters that are like, that's not photography. So I'm like, whatever.
You know, the bigger you are, the more haters you're going to get. So
I guess.
That's when you know you're doing something right.
Yep.
Interesting. So I'm curious about how you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot, or I guess in your case, for the multiple shoots that it would take to put a composite together.
So how do I get inspired for a photo shoot?
Yeah, like how do you envision it in your head?
I mean, man, the way that I come out with a good photo is, well, first of all, I get inspired by movies or by current events. I really love like adventure movies, spy movies, that whole thing. So a lot of my inspiration comes from that. But I also love like a lot of illustration. And so I sort of mix a bunch of different things. But as far as coming up with an actual photo shoot, I think that, well, I know that I have a winning photo is when I can like feel the emotion in my mind, you know, as I'm thinking about the image. Mm-hmm. So I go through, I pick a concept, I go through, think about all the possible angles I could shoot it at. I think about the meaning behind the photo. And as soon as I come up with something powerful in my mind and I can like feel that emotion or that excitement, then I know that that's a winning photo. And surprisingly enough, when I meet with clients, I've learned to sort of trust that initial emotion that I have. Because a lot of the time I'll meet a client and they'll give me a brief. And it's almost like the first or second idea that I have that they love.
Hmm.
Which is weird. And most of the time, that's the one that I do. I've sort of like learned to trust that feeling instead of, I mean, look, the culture of advertising is to come up with 10,000 ideas before you find the winning idea.
Hmm.
And so you would expect to have like a million different things you'd have to tell them. But a lot of the time I will just pitch that first idea. A lot of photographers are scared to pitch their ideas because, you know, they think, oh, maybe they won't like it. Let's be safe on this. But if you're bold and confident, it's like, look, this is the image that I think would best represent your brand, you know, even if it's the first thought that comes to you, sometimes those are the best.
You know, I agree. I do. It's interesting you say that because growing up, I started off with art and I eventually moved into photography. But with both of those and anything creative, I would get this feeling. I'd call it this feeling in my tummy. And when I was a kid, I didn't know how to verbalize it, how to put it into words. And there was a time where I tried to convince myself that that feeling wasn't good enough. If I'm taking photos, then I need good composition and lighting and all this technical stuff. And it took me a while to circle back and realize that instinctually, you can't really deny that feeling in your gut. Of course, you have to have other skills, technical skills as well. But really being able to identify, you know, internally when you're on the right track can really be key, I think, especially for creative professionals.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I mean, one thing that some advice that I want to give on that note would be to not restrict yourself. I remember before I knew anything about Photoshop, I would always restrict myself based on what I knew how to do. And so I'd have some amazing idea and then I'd say, oh, I can't do that because I don't know how to do that. But I had a mentor that told me to not put any restriction on what you can do. He said, just think about the idea first and then figure out a way to do it. He said, don't do it the opposite way around because then your work's just going to be boring. You know, you're only going to do what you can do. But if you have a bigger imagination, you'll eventually reach that and you're going to continue to try. So constantly I've had every single photo shoot is bigger than the next. And sometimes I pitch my ideas to clients and I regret it after the fact. And I say, man, that's huge. Like this one I did for Adobe, you know, who would have thought that I would have to shoot, you know, 150 employees and models and like paint in the shadows and shoot everybody separately and go to New York for 6 days and shoot, you know, walk around the city, shoot everything separately. I mean, it was an insane project. Took me me and my team over 300 hours to produce. And
wow.
And I mean, I almost quit photography after that because it was like so difficult. But I mean, it's like each project, and that's the thing that pushes me. You know, even though I don't know how to do something, that doesn't stop me from actually going out and doing it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're really being true to yourself as a creator. And I remember hearing somewhere that it took you a while. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you first stepped into photography, were you first putting out work that was more standard? And then it took you a little while before you decided to do your own style?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I remember looking back. I sort of forget how long ago I started, but I look at some of the photos that I took initially, and they were just very basic, you know? Mm-hmm. But I remember always testing and pushing my boundaries, and that's sort of the thing that got me to this level, is constantly pushing the boundaries, doing things that I don't think I can do, you know? So I was always trying, like, testing out colors at first without doing compositing or anything. I was just testing out crazy colors. And looking back now, I'm like, those are some ugly, dang ugly colors that I picked, you know? But I was always trying to push the boundary and go extreme, and you just keep learning.
A learning process, for sure. So in your opinion, then, what makes a good photo stand out from an average photo?
I mean, there's many things. Sometimes it's just that thing. It's what's inside you that, you know, your imagination. I mean, it's obviously like the meaning. I think the thing that makes a photo stand out is how long you want to look at that photo.
Hmm.
And so if it's complex, sometimes simple photos can be complex because they have meaning behind them. And so you sit there and look at it and it has a meaning, you know, a personal meaning in your life or a political meaning or something, you know? I mean, so you look at one of my images and it's extremely, let's say the Adobe one, it's extremely complex. So you sit there and you look at all the little pieces. They each tell a story, and there's actual stories inside this image. It's not just like random people walking around. There's a bunch, there's like 20 or so stories going on in there, and little like hints and little things you have to find, sort of like a Where's Waldo. But then you can get a war photographer and you get a picture of a soldier like smoking a cigarette or whatever. And that could have just as much meaning. Somebody could stare at that photo just as long as a super complex photo because of the meaning behind it. So, yeah, I just think you can have meaning in both a simple and a complex image.
And I'm sitting here looking at your Adobe photo on the homepage of your website, and it is crazy. You know, for this particular photo, you could probably stare at this for a long while. I mean, I see people doing yoga off to the side. There's a dude on crutches, and they're all walking down the streets of New York. I can't imagine how much work went into that. But, you know, one reason I like to ask that question about what you think makes a good photo stand out is because we're constantly inundated with photos today on a daily basis. And I think it's really important as photographers that we're able to identify what we personally see as a good photo and why.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's the main thing that makes a good photo is the story behind it. A lot of photographers just shoot just because. Now, I've got caught in that too. You just shoot, and there's actually no meaning behind it, and it's extremely boring. For example, let's compare like two landscape photographers. There's Peter Lick. So if you're familiar with him, sold like the most expensive photo actually now he's like second most expensive photo. But so I remember walking into one of his galleries, and his work, I'm just going to say it straight up, is like, I'm not a huge fan of his work. I mean, he's really good, like not knocking on him, but mm-hmm. It's just not my style. You know, it's not something I would buy. But you go in there, and they have salespeople, and they tell you Peter's story. They tell you how he spends days just staying up trying to get the right image, weeks even, you know. And then sometimes he'll have to wait a whole year or two before he can get the right image. He'll like show up on location and it won't work, so he'll show up next year to get the same lighting like in spring or something. And then they talk about the printing, how the printing is they use a special crystal with the printing so that the light bounces off and it gives you the best effect coming from that image. And so they have a story behind that image, even though you can't really, just by looking at the photo, you can't tell. Like somehow a photographer needs to get across that story of the image, either it be just what's in the image itself or by telling your own story, like maybe on your about page or telling a story per image. I think that's what makes an image super interesting and makes something stand out. Now, if you want to make money doing it, that's a completely different story. And then it gets into something, you know, because usually when people ask that question, what makes an image interesting? It's usually because you want to make money at it and you want, you know, people to find interest in it. You want ad agencies to find interest. So when it comes to making money, that's a completely different game that you start getting into. And it's more related to the business more than the actual image sometimes.
Very true. Yeah. Yeah. It can be an entirely different thing. I know when I was learning photography, a lot of the emphasis was placed on the technical aspects, but also the concept behind it. And it wasn't until I graduated college when I tried to start actually making money off of my photos. I had a rude wake-up call that lasted years. It's definitely a different kind of beast. And we're actually going to tackle the business side of photography in just a bit here in the interview, which is my favorite portion of the interview. But first, I wanted to ask you briefly about the tools of the trade. What's your typical go-to gear for your shoots?
Super simple. Like a lot of people have a million lenses. I have one lens I always shoot with, and depending on the camera. So with my Canon, I usually shoot with I haven't shot with that for a while, 24 to 105, I think it is. And then I shoot now with Sony a7R, and it's the 24 to 70 lens, Zeiss, I think. And then, so yeah, that as far as camera goes, and then with lighting, very simple. I have four Einsteins. Mm-hmm. Paul C. Buff Einsteins. And then what else? I'm looking at my equipment right here. I mean, I can carry that. That's pretty much it. I can carry a four light setup with two cameras, everything I need, triggers, batteries, light stands with three bags. I can carry the whole thing around the whole world. And I can set up do a four light setup. You know, there's some photographers that have like 2,000 pounds worth of gear because they just love their gear. I mean, I shot a lot of my portfolio back in the day on just, which is speed lights.
Nice.
You know, speed, and people would come to me, they're like, wait, what, did you shot this with speed lights? I was like, yeah. Like, well, it doesn't, the rim light, like, it just doesn't work, doesn't go all the way down the subject, and, you know, it's not spread out enough. I'm like, well, somehow I figured it out, you know? It's like, people just love their gear, and it's like, you don't need, I mean, I have a friend that's constantly buying like $60,000 cameras for his video business. He's buying like, he wants to buy like a helicopter gimbal that doesn't even, you know, he doesn't even need it. It's like a $600,000 gimbal. And it's like, man, you don't need all that. You know, like you can shoot now with a $2,000 camera with similar quality, you know? So.
Yeah. It's easy to get caught up in the gear. I've been there. And at the time for me, it was dealing with insecurity, I think, with myself as a photographer. And, you know, when I started this podcast and through the process of it, talking to different people, it's been a message along similar lines that it's not the gear that makes the photographer or the creative or the artist. It's the vision behind it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I am curious, however, what's your favorite photography accessory other than your camera? And tell us why.
Favorite photography accessory? My computer, because I can edit all my photos. I mean, other than that, I don't know. Yeah, I would say, let's see.
That's a perfectly valid answer, by the way.
I mean, just my computer, really. Like, I love my MacBook. You can just go all around the world, just edit from the MacBook and produce quality images. So.
And speaking of editing, would you be willing to enlighten us a bit with your post-process workflow?
Yes, it's a lot of people, I even share my tutorials with people on how to create my painted look. It's just like a unique, surreal look. And so there's a lot of dodging and burning involved. There's a lot of just coloring selectively, a lot of just overall haze, similar coloring. I mean, there's so much there. It's so involved. I mean, it's like me talking to you about 100 hours worth of small editing that I do. But I mean, the thing is what I realized, because at first, I mean, a lot of people are scared. Like when they get a good style, you're sort of scared to share it with the world because you're thinking, okay, people are going to copy this and I'm going to be out of business. But the thing is, like, I just got over that fear and I said, I just want to share this with people because people want to know how it's done. What I realized is that my style is mine. Like it's how it gets down to the details of how I brush, how I stroke an image, how I brush, you know, a certain shadow or how I dodge and burn, like my hand movements, you know, the colors that I see through my eyes. I mean, it gets really personal. So I don't think anybody can copy somebody else's style 100%. And so, yeah, like I have tutorials on it. It's a lot of, that's the main thing, probably dodging and burning, selective coloring, all that.
And so do you find when people take your, when they view your tutorials and learn from them, the resulting image that they have, is it always a bit different from yours then, even though they used similar techniques as you, that they learned from you?
Yeah, you can tell somewhat that like somebody's using my dodging and burning style because I do it a little bit differently. I use certain layer modes and whatnot, layering effects to get that look. And so I can tell when somebody is using it and when they've learned from my tutorial, but it looks completely different. I mean, you know, it's like I do 100 things and they're probably doing like two or three that look similar to what I'm doing.
Interesting. You know, next let's get into the nitty gritty about running your photography business, which is a huge piece, I think. I was just talking to another photographer, Bob Christ, and he mentioned that 80% of his photography business is actually not doing photography. And the other 20%, he's taking photos, he's shooting photos, which I think is something really important for people to realize, especially those aspiring or beginning photographers, because it's easy to get caught up in the beginning and think, oh, I'm just going to be taking photos 100% of the time. And while you can do that, it's most likely that you're not going to have a photography business because other things are going by the wayside, like marketing or keeping up your books. So for you, oh, I love this part of the conversation. Could you tell us what's the most challenging aspect about being in business for yourself?
Most challenging aspect is, well, there is pretty much like everything is challenging when it comes to running a business. but I mean, you know, little details like the taxes you have to pay and all that administrative stuff. But I think one of the main things is after you do a big job, like this Adobe job was for like a 3 to 6 month thing. You're so involved with that job that if you're a one-man team, it's sort of difficult to get your marketing out there while you're working, you know, and that's what you need to do. Because I noticed, you know, after like a big job, sometimes if I don't pay attention to my marketing, I don't, you know, I dry up for maybe 2-3 months. And then you have to get back on it and you're like, why am I not getting business? And you have to like reach out to people again,
right?
Go meet people in person. You know, it's a game about constantly being on top of people's minds. I mean, being the first thing people think about, that's really the game of photography here. It's not like you can show somebody something and 3 months later they'll remember you. Sometimes that happens, but a lot of the times they're just so, they get, you know, companies get so much mail, so many people inquiring about working with them that they just forget about you. And so you always have to be top of the mind.
Yeah, I had someone point out to me that it was it was another photographer for this podcast that, in their opinion, the best time to market themselves was when they were busy, as opposed to when everything had dried up and they had no clients. By then it was too late, but they had to make sure they remembered that they do have to keep putting themselves out there, you know, even if they're working a huge job or they feel like they don't have time for it, they have to make time.
Yep, for sure. You have to. That's probably the best time, because then that's when the fire's going. That's when people see that you're working. You know, you can send stuff out to them. I agree.
Hey, photographers. I want to pause the interview and take a quick second to tell you about the New York Institute of Photography at nyip.edu. It's an online school for students who want to learn photography from the comfort of their own home on their own time. Not only is the New York Institute of Photography the world's largest online photography school, but they've been in business for over 100 years. Yes, you heard that right, 100 years. Originally established in 1910, they got their start as a brick-and-mortar school. Fast forward to today, and the New York Institute of Photography is now an online school where you can study anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Every student gets a personal pro photographer mentor who will review your photos and help you improve. You can choose from 9 online courses based on your skill level and area of interest. They have courses on digital photography fundamentals, wedding photography, travel photography, photojournalism, marketing, and more. To view the free course catalog and daily specials, check out the New York Institute of Photography at www.nyip.edu. Again, that's www.nyip.edu. Let's get back to the interview. And so what have you found to be the most effective techniques then, as far as getting new assignments, projects, and making new connections?
Man, I do a whole 1 hour training. Oh, there's so much on that. But I mean, the main thing is called influencer marketing. So it's just simply put, working with somebody of influence to get your work exposed to their audience. That's probably been the best marketing I've ever done.
So strategically reaching out and connecting with someone whose audience would be interested in your work, ultimately?
Yeah, offering your work to somebody. And some people, I mean, I think it's hilarious. Some people are so against free work. And it's mainly the people that are over, you know, a certain age range. The people that grew up in the 80s and like, or the 70s. And like, you never offer free work. I mean, there's like a new day, a new way of marketing nowadays there's like these dinosaurs that are doing the same old, not dinosaur photographers, but like as far as marketing goes, the marketing is like a dinosaur, you know, like sending out physical mailers and like calling people and sending out emails, you know, that's probably like some of the least effective things that you could be doing. Nowadays, it's all about thinking creatively how to get in with influencers. I mean, so I offer my work for free to influencers, no strings attached, and in turn, they expose my work to their audience. And that's how I've got a ton of work. I mean, how simple is that? You know, it's all about, I mean, same with in the business world, it's all about who you know. It's the same with photography. It's all about who you know. I just got a job in, a 5-day job in Chicago, just got home from it, big budget. I don't even shoot food. It was for a food startup company. I don't even shoot food. Like, I've done it before, but, you know, I don't shoot food. And I got this job because I knew somebody. And they wanted to hire me over a seasoned food photographer in Chicago.
Wow.
Because they knew me. They liked my work. And it's that personal connection. It's like, that's, if you want to make it, that's what you got to do. I mean, so many people, I ask so many people what they do for marketing. I mean, because I have my own podcast as well, but I always see that photographers are spending hours on their website. I mean, that is marketing to photographers for some reason. And it used to be my marketing as well. I would just spend hours editing my website thinking, okay, if people, you know, if my website's perfect, then I'll start getting business. That's not true at all. That's just a waste of time most of the time. You know, it's like, just get your work up there, just put it up. And that's probably 1% of the equation. You know, then aside from that, 99% is meeting people, you know, figuring out creative ways to connect with people and to make those relationships.
Okay, so for those people listening to the podcast who have, say they've never considered this, and you're probably blowing their minds right now, they might find it a bit intimidating, the thought of reaching out to influencers, or even, I guess, that first step of identifying who their influencers, who the best influencers would be for them to reach out to.
Yeah.
So would you be, I guess, willing to share with us step one of even beginning that process of finding out who is a good influencer and then getting them to actually share your work with their audience?
Sure. I mean, here's the thing. First of all, I don't want to say this in a disrespectful way, but if you're scared to go out and meet influencers and get out there and work, that's better for me. That's better for the photographers that are willing to do that because it works.
True.
And so the only reason I say that is to sort of motivate your audience to see that this is actually something that works. So yeah, some tips to like, I mean, it's not anything scary. At first it is, because you get sort of starstruck if you reach out to people. But the key here is to reach out to people that are extremely influential. You don't want to reach out to like your neighbor who has 500 people following him more than you. You know, you gotta go big or just not do it. And then the next thing is you have to look at their audience, make sure that their audience fits with your audience. You have to be super laser focused, make sure that their audience would be full of like decision makers that would hire you. So I've done this wrong in the past. Is where a lot of people get it wrong is they do work for, let's say, well, for example, I did work for this musician that their audience was a bunch of like teenage girls. You know, it's like, what does that do for your photography business?
You mean that wasn't helpful?
No. Well, actually, I'm just kidding. I didn't get any work. I didn't get any fans, not even fans, you know? So and that was just because I was thinking influencer marketing in general, but you have to be very specific with it, very strategic. Some influencers I've been reaching out to for years, you know, and just constantly, it's like this slow game. Some influencers respond back within 5 minutes. But it's all about the offer. It's all about, yeah, just what you offer them. Now, one key in my business, the thing that I do, I mean, there's so many things. I'm telling you guys, I've created a whole training, a whole dang school. Like, I have an online school based around the business of photography. It's not like one simple answer, because I had a photographer just contact me recently and say, the thing that I learned from like you talking, your training, whatever, your podcast, is that photography marketing, it's not like conventional. It's not like you can go out and just submit a resume to somebody. Like that just doesn't exist. Like few jobs exist, you know, like that. I don't want to say they don't exist at all, but it's not like if you're going to be freelance, you can't just submit an application somewhere to a company. It doesn't work like that. And so that's why I've created like a whole school. I mean, it's more complicated than that. But as far as like one thing that has helped me, like one concept, if I could pick one concept that has helped me in my marketing that has got me a ton of business, has been the law of reciprocity.
Okay.
And this is like a, for those who don't know what that is, it's an NLP law. NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It's basically just how to work with the mind of somebody, like how to influence somebody. And so this law of reciprocity is basically, if you do something for somebody, or if you give something to somebody unexpectedly, they'll feel indebted to you. And they'll feel like they need to return the favor in some way. And so that is how I've built my business, is through the law of reciprocity. That's what works. That's what separates me from other photographers. So many photographers do this wrong. They never get anywhere. They lose business. They go out of business because they don't get this one principle. So, for example, when working with an influencer, a lot of people will get scared and say, okay, if I do all this work for this influencer, I want something in return. So they'll set up a contract or a verbal contract saying, hey, if I do this work for you, if I offer you free work, will you post my images on Instagram? Okay. So most of the time people will say, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is they won't post it afterwards.
Interesting.
Because the law, and prove me wrong. If anybody wants to prove me wrong, go do it. I've done it so many times. Even some of my really good friends where I've set it up like that, they have not posted my work. They've not taken it seriously.
What?
But the way that you influence people is through this law of reciprocity. If you offer something to somebody unexpectedly, no strings attached. So in our case, what does unexpectedly mean? You know, most photographers want to set up some contract. Most companies want to set up a contract when working with influencers. Nobody truly gives things for free. What if you were to give something truly for free with no strings attached? How would that make an influencer feel? How indebted would they feel to you? Now, I had a big influencer I reached out to, and he was a big business guy. I went to do his photo shoot, no strings attached. And honestly, I had no strings attached, not even a back agenda. I just wanted to meet him. I wanted to get connected because I realized the importance of, you know, connections. And so I mean, that's just where it's at, is connections. So I did the photo shoot for him. And after the photo shoot, like, we didn't talk about much about his business or about anything that I wanted. We just talked about him, about, you know, the photo shoot, like just random stuff. So at the end of this photo shoot, He picks up a book, a coffee table book. It's about $100-something, and he gives it to me. He's like, "Hey man, thanks for doing this. Like, here's this book." I was like, "Okay, like sure, thank you."
Thanks.
You know,
Yeah.
so walk out. I'm walking out the door, and he's like, "Oh wait, hold on a second." He gives me one of his books that hasn't even been published yet. He's like, "Hey, I don't like give this out to many people, but here's the first chapter that I've produced of my book. You know, not many people have this. Like, let me know what you think." I was like, "Great, thank you." I'm walking out the door again. Before I hit the door, he gives me a free T-shirt. He just gives me a T-shirt. He's like, "Hey, here's a T-shirt." It's like, "Wow, okay, thank you." Like, I couldn't even fit the stuff in my bag to go back, from LA to Utah. So, I finally leave. A week later, we chat again, and he gives me access to his online school, which is like $1,000.
Whoa.
He gives me access to that. You know, constantly giving. Okay, he posted the photos everywhere, tagging me all over the place.
Nice.
You know, that's the law of reciprocity right there. That is how you build a successful business, is through, and that's how you connect with people, is through that law. I mean, I could go on and on, but that's like the main thing in my business.
And I see how that could be scary for photographers who haven't done that before. I mean, you know, offering your services for free, you're doing it strategically, but I could see some people having the initial objection of, well, I don't want to devalue my work, or, you know, I don't want to devalue photographers as a whole in the industry. But what you're doing then, essentially, it's not devaluing, is what you're saying. It's a strategic way. I mean, it sounds like you're still being genuine with it, but it's a way that you're building relationships.
Yeah. And it's not devaluing. It's not devaluing my work or other photographers' work. But there is a strategy to doing free work. For example, you don't want to do free work for a company that you're wanting to work with, or just a company in general.
Hmm.
When you want to do free work with influencers, that's when you want to do free work. So if you're wondering, okay, should I do this photo shoot for free to get exposure, whatever, it's not just about exposure. It's about who they can get you in contact with, you know, because exposure is cheap. Like, a lot of people promise exposure. I'll expose you to my audience. Like, who's in your audience? What does that even mean?
Right.
You know, let's get down to the numbers here. Like, how many people are going to see this? Like, who's going to see this? So you want, when doing free work, you want to work with influencers specifically. So it could be a company. Let's say I'm coaching a food photographer right now on how to get into the industry. And she was wondering, she just gave me a call yesterday and was wondering about if she should do free work for this restaurant. So I asked her, I was like, are they influencers, or are they just a company you want to work with? And it was sort of both.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're starting, that restaurant owner becomes an influencer to you, because then they have influence over other restaurant owners. They can refer your business to other people. But it's just very difficult to do free work for a company and then hope that they will give you money in the future for that free job, because that goes along another law of NLP called anchoring. So everybody's anchored to a certain price. And the first time somebody is exposed to something is when they get anchored to that thing. So if you offer your work for free to a company, they're going to be anchored at $0.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. And so next time you try to up their price, they're going to think that's ridiculous. And they're going to think like, no, let's work out a trade. Let's do this. They're just not going to get it. I mean, there's ways to de-anchor, but that, it just gets really tough at that point.
I'm glad you make that distinction. I really am. So you're saying then, when you're engaging in the law of reciprocity and you want to offer your work for free, you do that with influencers who are different than people or companies that you would want to ultimately work with and have them pay you. For those people, those companies, you don't offer your work for free, because then they'll think of you as the free photographer.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yep. And let's be honest here. Like, influencers, like, if you're going with a big influencer, they're probably not going to pay for your work, because they get so much free stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
If you're an influencer, people pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars just to post something, you know, like, why would they have to pay for anything? And so it's the same with, you know, photographers that come away and they're like, hey, I shot like an Adidas campaign, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I wonder how much they paid you. Sometimes if it's like an official ad campaign, then yes, that's a big paying job. But like sometimes those big companies, you know, photographers drool to work with them. So they'll work for cheap.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, that's why it doesn't like dilute the industry or like, I guess, give a bad taste to photographer or a bad outlook on photographers and their pricing, because you're working with influencers and they're probably going to lowball you anyway, as opposed to companies, which companies are actually going to pay you for your work. If that makes sense.
Oh man. Yes. These are some golden nuggets for sure. Wow. You know, okay. So I'm curious then, what's the most common mistake that you see professional photographers make today, or that you yourself have made in the past?
One of the biggest mistakes is fear about their pricing, fear about not raising the price, not valuing their work. And I mean, that sounds, you know, super generic. People are like, oh, well, you're just telling me to be more confident. No, like there's ways to price better and whatnot. But I think one of the biggest issues is photographers just having fear in general, like, and just anybody in business, just fearing things. Like there's no point to fear anything. Like if you want something, just go out and get it. Like anything is possible. I mean, people tell you so much crap about this isn't possible. Like, mm-hmm. like those people are living in like the Stone Ages. They're living in like the medieval ages. They have closed minds. Like anything is possible. So, you know, photographers are like, oh, I'm not making much money. Like some of my students, I've been able to like get them enormously huge results, to open their mind to the possibilities of what is out there. And all it takes sometimes is just a mindset. All it takes is a mindset that you think that it's possible. I mean, look, I fear too all the time, you know, but you just have to get over that. That's part of life. Like the road to success is failure. You just have to accept that. As soon as you accept that, then the fear sort of gets taken away. You're like, what's the fear in that? Like, it's just a learning experience. The faster you figure out what not to do is like the best way to do things, because then you'll figure out what you want to do. There's this guy, I don't know if anybody's religious here or whatever, but there's this like guy in our church, in my church, and he gave this amazing explanation on this topic of fear. He said that him and his son were out in the desert. And they got lost. They went down this path and they got lost in this truck. And so they turned around. They were trying to go home. And at some point, they reached a fork in the road. They could not remember which way to go. And they both prayed. And they said, okay, Lord, like, which way should I go? Should it be right or left? And I mean, this applies if you're not religious. I'm not, like, trying to, you know, push, like, some religious spin on this. But it works if you're not religious, okay? So, mm-hmm. but here's the concept. So they prayed. And they said, should we go right or left? And they both felt inspired to go right. So they went down the road, and 15 minutes later, they came to a block. And there was no road after that. So they obviously went the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Now, they were frustrated. They both went back, and they're both frustrated. They said, we both felt inspired, like on two different separate accounts. We're two separate people. We felt inspired to go down this road. Why do we feel that way? And they came to the conclusion that the best way to find out the right thing to do is sometimes to do the wrong thing and to go down the wrong road. Because think about if they would have gone down the right road, they wouldn't have known for miles. They would have been unsure for miles if that were the right road. But now it took only 15 minutes and they found out the which was the wrong thing, and then they found out what the right thing was. And so sometimes when we fear, we're sitting there at that like crossroads and we're just thinking, you know, fear is just sitting in that one spot saying, like, I'm not going to go right. I'm not going to go left. I don't know where to go. You know, what should I do? What should I do? But the thing is, sometimes you have to just make a wrong decision. You have to go down the wrong road. I mean, I've lost thousands of dollars. Like I mentioned my school, like, for example, like spending money on advertising. Like people don't know where to spend their money on advertising in the photo world and in the business world. And if you don't try certain things, you're never going to know what the right answer is. I've lost thousands of dollars, but now I know what the right way to do things is, you know. So anyway, that's sort of a long-winded answer, but I think photographers just have this, it's just a mindset sometimes. It's like they fear too much and they're not moving forward.
The road to success is failure. I had to write that down. That is such a great quote. And I really appreciate your transparency as well, as far as sharing with us, you know, some of the mistakes that you've made, because I think it's very easy for any of us to put other more successful people up on a pedestal. when they've all made mistakes. And what I found is that the most successful people, not just in photography, but in general, they've made more mistakes and had more quote unquote failures than the average person who's afraid to put themselves out there. And it's just a matter of not seeing failure as the end of the road, but just a learning process for sure.
Exactly. It's like, if you want to get there, I mean, people, here's the funny thing. Like people, I remember when I was first getting into business, people would say, like, or I'd be motivating them saying, man, you should come and, you know, try to start a business. Like it's a great lifestyle, you know, like to be a freelancer, to not be stuck to the 9 to 5. And they're like, no, man, like I fear, you know, the insecurity and the going out on my own. I fear what's going to happen. I stop them there. I was like, you know what I fear? And this is like a legitimate fear of mine. I said, I don't fear insecurity. What I fear is getting a 9 to 5 job. Mm. Like I fear being stuck for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, if you want to get to that place where you're living the lifestyle you want, either it be photography or whatever else it is, you need to fail. Like, don't be afraid of failure. That's almost the first thing. So, and for anybody listening right now, it doesn't matter what you're doing, like just have that mindset, switch your mindset and accept failure. Just accept you're going to fail miserably, but just smile, you know, because, because that means that you're one step ahead of your competition. You're one step ahead of the next guy that's not willing to step out and feel that fear.
Yes. So you're giving them permission to fail then.
Yeah. Just fail like crazy and just laugh at it, because sometimes you're going to want to quit. Like, I've never felt like quitting mm-hmm. more in my life than probably within the last year.
Really?
But I've had more success than I've ever had in my whole life within the last year.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, now tell us then, what's the one thing you wish you knew before you stepped into photography professionally?
Man, that is so difficult. The one thing I wish I knew, I sort of like, it was sort of a progression. I learned things slowly, and it was sort of a good thing. I mean, I wish I knew a lot of things, you know. I wish I knew how to talk with clients. I wish I knew how to price. And there's so many things that could have accelerated my success if I knew them, but I didn't know them. I always say this to people, like, we don't know, we don't know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, sometimes it's one little thing in our business that as soon as we like change that one thing or we apply that one principle, we see huge results. And that's sort of the story of my career is as soon as I'm willing to like invest in myself, invest in my education, learn more, you know, things change. So it's just that learning. Like, I wish I knew everything in the beginning, you know, like it would have, I mean, if I knew what I knew now at the beginning, which I could have known, but it's just, yeah. It was just a lack of understanding. You know, I didn't search out for mentors. I didn't seek out for like education. If I knew what I knew back then, I would have made so much more money. I would have made so, you know, like I would have accelerated my career just incredibly, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm constantly kicking myself because I wish I had started this podcast years before I did, because I probably could have saved myself a lot of headache and heartache with the bonehead mistakes that I've made in my business for sure.
Yeah.
So then tell us, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, an online course, hint, hint, or a book that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Yes, two things. Man, there's so many books, but one of the best books I've ever read is called the 48 Laws of Power.
Hmm.
It's one of the best books. I keep going back to this book because it's like mind blowing, and it's talks about concepts of power, how you, and it's sort of put in this in like an interesting way. It's this author is talking about how people have gained power in the past. Like in history, how people got to power. And it gives you so many examples of scam artists. It gives you examples of like kings and queens. It gives you examples of the like mafia people. And it's the most interesting thing, because the whole purpose of this book isn't that you go off and like use these principles to be evil or whatever, you know. And obviously some of these principles are unethical, but it's just for the education side of things on how to get to power, how you can have influence over other people. And so you take these principles and you apply the good principles to your business, and you'll realize that you'll start to change. Your confidence is going to start to change. The way you interact with people is going to start to change. You start thinking about strategy in everything you do. It's a book about strategy on how to become influential, how to become powerful, but also warning, because I know a lot of people that read this book. It's a powerful book. A lot of people that read this book actually apply the sleazy principles that it teaches,
really?
You know, and it's not good. Like I have friends that after I read that book, I'm like, wow, like you, and I know that they've read the same book. I'm like, you were trying to apply these principles in daily life. Like you were literally a scam artist, you know? And so that's sort of the warning that comes along with the book, you know, to only like use it for good. But I mean, it's super powerful. So anyway, that's one thing. And then the next thing for your audience, I do these live webinars, and you guys need to attend a live webinar if you want to know more about influencer marketing. People have had huge success just with the live workshop. Free. It's completely free. You can go to ftpschool.com and then /webinar-registration.
ftpschool.com. Give that to us one more time.
Yeah, ftpschool.com and then /webinar-registration.
Excellent.
And that'll get you on the next one that we're doing.
We'll be sure to include that in the show notes. I was trying to prompt you to give your webinar information and your online school information, so I'm glad you did. Awesome. Well, our final question, but definitely I feel one of the most important. Tell us where we can find you as far as your website and your online presence in general.
Yeah, just joshrossi.com. Then you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Josh, for just taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center.